Welcome to Go For It, Battle After the War. So I said I'd post anything new despite the downtime to work on my book. Well, I have something to share. So 2 weeks ago, while I was shooting pool in the evening, I started to feel a little bit more pain than usual. And that night, while talking to a friend on the phone, I think it was around midnight, the pain progressively got worse. And by mid-morning, I would say around 2 a.m. or so, I started to feel really hot, like my skin was starting to burn. So I took my temperature. At that point, it was 102. So I took some aspirin, and then I grabbed an ice pack and a washcloth and, you know, kind of put it behind my neck to try and help cool my body down. I waited about 35, 40 minutes, and I took my temperature again, and I was at 105. I was on the phone at this point with a friend of mine, and I was explaining to her how I was feeling. And she said, you know, why don't I just take you to the ER? And I said, no, you're almost an hour away, and, you know, if I'm sick, I don't want you to get it too. So she stayed with me on the phone, and obviously never fell asleep. So at some point closer to early in the morning, we finally hung up. And at that point, my temp had finally started to go back down. It was still high, but it started to go back in a good direction. So at that point, I was able to fall asleep for a few hours. And when I woke up, the pain and the fever, well, the pain was gone. The fever was at 99 when I took my temperature. So I thought I was improving, and that I probably just had a really nasty 24-hour flu. So I went about my day. I went and shot pool again that night and came home. And within the hour of getting home, the fever went up again. Not quite as high. I was at 101.7 at that point. But then I got a migraine. And then shortly thereafter, I started having diarrhea. And then within a brief period, I started having shortness of breath. So it was late. I finally got to a point where I could lay down and go to sleep. And I ended up having a seizure. So I woke up, and once I completed, I called 911. I explained everything that I'm telling you now to the 911 operator. And of course, I knew I had been exposed several days earlier to somebody who was COVID positive, but I didn't believe that's what I had. And at first, I really didn't think that I had it. But, you know, after seizing and putting all this together in my mind, I thought, well, you know, that's quite possible. So she went through all her questions on the 911 call, sent an ambulance, and said, I believe based on your symptoms, you do have COVID, but they'll test you, so sit tight, help is on the way. So I said, great. So I gathered my stuff that I knew I was going to take just in case I was going to have to stay the night or whatever. Yeah, because I didn't know what to expect. All I've seen is what's in the news. So my body was a wreck. I could hardly walk from the pain that I was in. And ambulance showed up. Off we went. ER isolated me immediately as soon as I got there. They drew blood, started fluids, threw an IV. A neurologist came in to see me about the seizure and never really said anything else about the symptoms, the COVID symptoms or anything. I assume because they had at that point done that god-awful, horrible test where they stick those Q-tips all the way up into your brain. And sent that off. So at that point, I don't know how long I was there. It was, you know, you're in four walls. You can't see the sun. There's no windows or nothing. So no way to know what time it was. I was in there a long time. Anyway, my COVID test came back inconclusive. So that just meant that another one had to be done. I didn't know that until they actually came in and said, hey, you know, you're going to be admitted. So the second one showed positive. So I was ready to be in for the long haul. I pretty much slept the whole time I was in the hospital. I had no energy. I'll go through the symptoms in a little bit, but it was just horrible. So the next day, at lunch, I think I was told by my nurse that they were looking to release me that day. So, you know, I was excited about that. I was feeling so-so, you know. So Neuro came in and talked to me a little bit, said that he was going to put me on Depakote for my seizures and to check with my primary care at, you know. So I agreed to that. Currently waiting for my medications to show up. I got a call actually this morning, as of recording in this podcast, that my medication had been ordered and that it was in the mail and should be in here, if not today, tomorrow or after Thanksgiving. And they're usually pretty quick about getting medications to me, so I'm not too concerned about that. But I wanted to talk about this because I know everyone's story is slightly different. Symptoms are slightly different. What I wanted to address, though, is if you have the symptoms, don't be the tough guy like I was, because that was not the smart way to go. Get on the phone, call 911, go to the ER, get help immediately. I feel very fortunate to be here. I could have easily been a statistic. So I hope others listening will learn from my mistakes and not make the same. This virus is nasty. It is seriously no joke. So I took the liberty of doing a little bit of research. I'm going to run through some facts and stats here and hopefully give you some guidelines or information to go by in case this happens to you, if it hasn't happened already. So what I'm seeing on the internet, and a lot of it's from the CDC's website and some other miscellaneous websites that you'll be able to Google search if you want to check my facts. The symptoms may appear 2 to 14 days after exposure to the virus, and people with the symptoms may have COVID-19, according to CDC. So as you heard me describe a little bit earlier, muscle or body aches, fever or chills. Now, for me, I had really, really hot skin. I never had chills. I felt like my skin was on fire. Shortness of breath, difficulty breathing obviously comes with shortness of breath. Headaches, I had major headaches on and off the whole time. It actually kicked my migraines into high gear. I was having a migraine almost every day. The cough, the fatigue I'm still experiencing, and I'm 2 weeks out of it. The one thing that I did not get that it seems to be most common is the new loss of taste or smell. I never experienced that. Diarrhea, yes. Sore throat, yes. Congestion, you're probably listening to my voice if you listen to my earlier cast. I'm congested still. Runny nose, meh. I would say I had it, but it wasn't bad. Certainly wasn't the most annoying symptom I had. Nausea I had throughout. That finally subsided, a couple days ago probably. Never vomited. I'm not one of those people that likes to vomit, so, you know, I try to avoid that at every turn. I mean, obviously, it's going to come out if it's going to come out, but I'm not one of those who's, quick to let it go. So they talk about emergency warning signs, and these are the ones I ignored. So the trouble breathing, obviously, that's an important one. That happened day two. Day one, I didn't have that issue. Persistent pain or pressure in the chest. Let me tell you, the pain that I felt in my chest and in my upper back was unlike anything I had ever felt in my life.
I've been punched, I've been kicked, I've been hit, I've been run over by vehicles, I hit a city bus, nothing compares. And I am dead serious when I say that. So you feel any of these things that I'm mentioning, I'm going to go back through them. Trouble breathing, persistent pain, pressure in the chest, new confusion, inability to wake or stay awake, and bluish lips or face. So important. Get on 911 and get to the hospital. So obviously I never looked at my face. I never even looked at these lists of symptoms. I know after the fact because I had them. But the ones that I'm telling you I didn't have, like the vomiting I didn't have, the bluish lips or face, I don't think I had that. But again, I woke up at 2-3 o'clock in the morning with all these symptoms popping up left and right. So I don't know if that actually took place. And if it did, nobody pointed it out when they finally saw me. So I'm assuming that I didn't have that. things to know, antibiotics do not prevent or treat COVID-19 because COVID-19 is caused by a virus, not bacteria. So something to consider if you're thinking about trying to muscle it out. Again, don't. But that's just something to know. I took aspirin and that helped with my fever, but it did not help with anything else. Some patients with COVID-19 may also develop a bacterial infection such as pneumonia, i.e. that's, you know, your chest congestion. I don't know that I actually had pneumonia. I think all I had was COVID, but I did have that breathing feeling like you're breathing through a sponge, you know, like the popcorn in your chest, like you normally feel or get when you have pneumonia. So, but I don't know. I had a chest x-ray and they didn't come back and say that. So I'm assuming I didn't have that. I just have the congestion that came with it. But in that case, once you're in the ER, in the hospital, or with your primary care doctor, they're going to give you an antibiotic to attack that anyway. The other thing that's important to recognize is they're still recommending zinc and vitamin C to help combat COVID. So my experience with vitamin C and zinc is this. Zinc is one that it's, if you're low in zinc, you're probably over 50 and, or you're probably under the age of 10, maybe younger. So having a zinc deficiency, that's something you want to check with your doctor for before you start taking zinc. Don't just go and buy over-the-counter zinc and start taking it. The reason I say that and the reason I emphasize talking to your doctor first is because zinc can also cause diarrhea if you take too much of it. Other side of the coin, if you're not taking enough, it could also cause diarrhea. So knowing that and knowing that that's one of the COVID symptoms, I would keep that in mind. Vitamin C, if you take too much, can also cause diarrhea. It can also cause vomiting, nausea, some of the other symptoms that fall under COVID. So make sure you talk to your doctor before you start taking excess of any vitamins, because while they are good for you, there is such a thing as a statement that is simply this: too much of a good thing can be bad. And that's true. So do be careful with that. I take a high potency vitamin C. It's by 365 and I get it at Whole Foods. I recently found it at Amazon because I was quarantined and I wasn't able to leave the house. And I take 500 milligrams a day of that. So that's my excess. I am not low in zinc and I am not low in vitamin C. The only thing that I have been low in consistently is calcium. And that's, I'm assuming, probably because of the autoimmune issues. So I work on that. But I try to get all of my vitamins naturally. An example of a place to get zinc, so you know, is chicken. If you're eating chicken, chicken is high in zinc. You know, there's easy ways to get your zinc throughout the day because zinc is a very minuscule requirement. I think it's like 50 milligrams a day or some crap. But check with your doctor. I am not a doctor. I am not in the medical field whatsoever. I know what I know because of the research I've done over the years, thanks to Gulf War Illness. So keep that in mind. Talk to your doctor. A lot of these tests can be done through urine. They don't necessarily have to be done through blood. But again, those are questions for your doctor. They'll be able to tell you that. This is not really a vitamin cast, so I'm not going to go detailed into vitamins and what they can and can't do for you and how you can get them or not get them. Vitamin D3 was another one that was mentioned that COVID patients are running low in. So if you're not in the hospital and you are on the mend, while you're sitting at home quarantine, get it out in your backyard, drop a chair in the shade, sit there and read a book or whatever, but make sure you get your outside time. It is far better than taking an actual vitamin D3 pill. And again, that's something else to discuss with your doctor. So the question I had is, what makes this virus so infectious? Because, you know, there's the flu, there's pneumonia, there's SARS, you know, there's all these other things that are out there. And while we do have vaccines for them, it's, you know, they're still spreadable and we still get them, but nobody gets them at the rate that we're getting COVID. It's just crazy. So the description that I found for it, or the answer I got, I guess, is the spikes in the coronavirus are how the virus attaches to the host cell. In other words, you. The stickier the spike, the more efficient the virus is at infecting and spreading. So this virus that causes COVID-19 has spikes that stick to human cells like Velcro. And it forms a very strong bond, obviously, with the receptor called ACE2, A-C-E-2, which is abundant throughout the human body. So these strong bonds means less SARS-CoV-2 virus or COV-2 viruses are necessary to start an infection. All but one of the COVID-19 vaccines currently in phase 3 clinical trials in the United States need 2 shots to be effective. So keep that in mind as well. The other COVID-19 vaccine uses 1 shot. The other thing that I don't like about these COVID vaccines is it's, you know, and I use this from a tech knowledge standpoint, not a medical knowledge standpoint. So every time you get internet, the first thing the salesperson tells you is, well, we can promise you up to 1.5 gigabits. Well, if you're listening to the news, we can promise you up to 90% effectiveness. Well, when you say up to or may, I don't hear any absolute in those two phrases. So you're telling me it might work up to 90%, or it might work up to 70%. So for those reasons, I'm avoiding it. I'm not telling anybody to follow my rule or my lead, but that's my feeling. Until you can tell me that it's not up to, that it is, then we'll talk about whether or not you're going to stick that foreign crap in my body. Until then, I beat it once, I'll take my chances. Next time I'll be a little smarter and I'll go to the hospital, but they aren't sticking me with a vaccine. I agreed to that once, and this is where I am now. And I'm not saying that vaccines were the only issue we had going into the military, going into the Gulf War, but they certainly, I think, are a factor. I do believe that. So the other thing to be aware of, CDC is implementing a new smartphone-based tool called VSafe, Victor Safe, and it's to check in on people's health after they receive a COVID-19 vaccine. So if you do get the vaccine, they are checking on you. They're interested in knowing what your response is to it. So when you receive your vaccine, you should also receive a VSafe information sheet telling you how to enroll in VSafe. If you enroll, you'll receive regular text messages directing you to surveys where you can report any problems or adverse reactions that you have after receiving the COVID-19 vaccine. So I read that sentence and I know immediately that this is just a wider I'm thinking guinea pig arrangement, but the technical term, I think, is just an open market for testing this drug on a wider range of people to see how everybody responds. So for that reason also, I am not interested in being a part. And anyway, I'm going to close this cast out at this point. This is 21 minutes into this, and I know holidays are here. I want to wish everyone a happy and safe Thanksgiving. And please remember to mask up, keep your distance. I know it's family and it's going to be difficult, and we're all going to be drinking and partying and having a good time. And I bring that up, and I want to just point that out real quick. If you are drinking, keep in mind that during that time period, alcohol does prohibit the body from absorbing vitamins. So if you are taking those extra vitamins and you're drinking, bear in mind, you're kind of wasting your money there. I would pay attention to the alcohol intake. I'm not saying don't drink, but if you've got COVID and you're trying to get rid of it, it might be a good time to nix the alcohol intake until you're completely 100% better. The last thing to keep in mind is there are reinfections at a pretty good rate. If you want to jump online and look, I didn't look up percentages. I was just researching whether or not you can in fact be reinfected after some of the statements that have been made by politicians and stuff, not calling out any names. But I thought it was important to know. And yes, reinfections are happening, so do be careful. So cover your sneeze, cover your cough, put it in your shoulder, even if you're wearing a mask. Don't just talk to somebody, sneeze, and continue talking. Turn your head. The old school nagging that mom used to say. Cover your cough. Cover your sneeze. Put it in your shoulder. Don't expect that mask to save your loved ones, because it's not going to do that by itself. There's no mask that we have in civilian life that's going to protect anybody 100%. And a good example of that, for those of us that were overseas during the Gulf War and any other war where chemical or biological warfare was a thing, think about the mop gear that we wore. And then tell me how well these masks are going to work. Anyway, again, have a great Thanksgiving. I'll step off my soapbox now, and don't forget to elbow bump a vet.